So Far From Home, The Diary of Mary Driscoll, An Irish Mill Girl, by Barry Denenberg. Pages 104 to 125. Tuesday, August 31st, 1847. Well, Aunt Nora is still in pain, with her cheeks all swollen. I begged her to stay home again today, but she was having none of it. Stubborn as a mule, she is. Wednesday, September 1st, 1847. Well, Mrs. Delaney is greatly relieved. A letter from her son came yesterday. She asked me to read it to her. John has found work digging holes in a cemetery. They work all day, and there is little time to rest. But he is thankful not to be working in a factory because one of his chums died from a boiler explosion. The poor boy was scalded so badly they could not save him. I didn't read that part to Mrs. Delaney. She'd just go to worrying. I read the rest as he wrote it. The pay is good, 80 cents a day. He is saving every penny and hopes to return home by Christmas. Sorry to be troubling you, she said. You're a good lass. She gripped my arm tightly. It felt as if I were being held by the claws of an awful big bird. Thursday, September 2nd, 1847. Mr. Fowler dismissed one of the girls. She has not been at work for the past 2 days. Laura says Mr. Fowler drives us so hard because of the premium the corporation pays him. The more work he gets out of us, the more money he makes. My head still aches terribly, but I am sure to come to the mills just the same. Lord knows I am used to hand work, but doing the same thing over and over is tiring. Aunt Nora placed a cold cloth on my forehead, which stopped the throbbing, but only for a while. Friday, September 3rd, 1847. One of the girls was caught reading her Bible instead of tending her machine. Took the heavy end of the stick, she did. Mr. Fowler was so angry, I thought his eyes would pop right out of his head. He took her Bible and threw it into his desk. Reading is not allowed in the spinning room. Some of the Yankee girls bring little clippings of poetry and favorite hymns. They paste them on the sides of the window near the drums and glance at them from time to time. Mr. Fowler watched me all afternoon. No matter where he was in the room, I could feel his eyes following my every move. Sunday, September 5th, 1847. Talked about everything under the sun, Annie and me. Having to leave home, working in the mills, the girls at the boarding house. Annie says she doesn't mind mill work. It lets her lay aside enough money. She wants to work just one more year. Then she'll set off on her own. She is lucky to be living at the boarding house. 'Tis so much nicer than the acre. Annie said that it is. Mill work has helped her see that there is more to life than working on a farm, and for that she is grateful. But she does not like having to go to church every Sunday. Mrs. Jackson keeping a sharp eye on their coming and going, and peddlers disturbing them at night, selling their ribbons, shoes, jewelry, and candy. She can barely find the time to write her poetry. I told her about my diary. 'Twas the first time I ever told anyone. It just jumped out of my mouth. Annie said I never ceased to surprise her. What bothers her most is being with people all day, every day, even when she eats and sleeps. I thought she liked Laura, Ruth, and Clarissa. I thought they were her friends. Annie said she does like Laura and Ruth. They are like sisters to her and just as precious. Still, there are times when she wants to be alone. Seemed to me all the Yankee girls were happy. They are always chirping away like little birds. Even the caged bird sings, Annie said, sounding just like Aunt Nora. As for Clarissa, she said nothing is worse than listening to her after she returns from one of her lectures. Annie says that Clarissa understands nothing but speaks at great length. I wish I could be more like Annie. She is so sure of herself. She knows what she thinks and isn't afraid to say it. She says I am shy. I told her that I'm not shy, just quiet. At least I'm not as shy as I was. That's what Aunt Nora says. It seems I'm always talking about Aunt Nora and now Annie wants to meet her. I was thinking someone like Annie wouldn't want to come to the acre, but she stood there looking at me, so I invited her for a wee visit on Sunday. She said she would be delighted. Aunt Nora thinks 'tis a fine idea. 'Twill be nice to have a friend for your birthday, she said. I had forgotten. Next Sunday is my birthday. I will be 15. Monday, September 6th, 1847. Lowell. One of the wee boys who cleans the machines got his got his finger caught today. It was snapped right off. Their hands are small enough to get into the hard-to-reach places, but they are in great danger because of this. The lad was near me when it happened. As soon as I heard him cry out, I rushed over and picked him up in my arms. Mr. Fowler was there in a flash and grabbed the boy from me. He told me to return at once to my machine. I would have liked to stay with the boy, but Mr. Fowler looked at me with those dull gray eyes of his. He's all eyes and no sight, that one. I said a prayer for the boy, but there's little I can do with that will change anything. Tuesday, September 7th, 1847. Lowell. Yesterday I heard Clarissa Burroughs talking about the Irish again. She didn't know I was near. She was talking so loud 'twas not to hear. She said that the mill agents like the Irish girls because we take all the lower-paying jobs and we have to take what we can get. Just look where they live, in shanty towns like the Acre. That's where that Mary Driscoll lives. She started imitating how I speak. Everyone laughed. The Irish should stay in Ireland, where they belong, Clarissa Burroughs said. The hairs were standing along the back of my neck, and my cheeks were burning like red-hot coals. I went over to where she stood, tapped her on the shoulder, I did. When she turned around, 'twas plain I was not who she expected to see. I asked her if she would say where she belonged, if there was no food to eat and everyone around her was starving. If leaving was her only hope, would you stay, Clarissa, I said. She looked at me, her dark eyes blinking. 'Twas like she was trying to make me disappear. Her mouth stayed open, but no sound was I hearing. We were standing so close I could smell her. I was after raising my voice, and some of the Yankee girls had gathered around. They were staring and talking to one another and began moving aside to let someone through. 'Twas Annie. Before I knew it, she had joined us in the center of the ring. I have never seen her look that way, like an animal sniffing the air, waiting to be sure before making a move. She took my arm and pulled me away from Clarissa Burroughs. Then she stepped in between us. She was standing right in front of me, her back to Clarissa. Pay her no mind, she whispered. I wanted to tell Annie that I was sorry, but truly I wasn't. Annie didn't give me a chance. She left as suddenly as she had appeared. The other girl stepped aside, letting her pass through the same way she came. I was once again facing Clarissa. She wasn't blinking anymore, but her mouth was still open. She came to me, stopping just inches away. I knew you were trouble the moment I saw you, she said. Her voice was shaking, and so was she, from the moment I saw you. Then she turned quickly and walked away, making a swishing sound with her skirt. I told Aunt Nora everything. She looked sad. If truth be told, she said, Clarissa Burroughs is right. We Irish are not where we belong. 'Tis a sorrowful thought. Wednesday, September 8th, 1847. Lowell. I asked Annie why the Yankee girls don't like the Irish. She said they blame us for what happened at the mills. They say that the factory work was better before there were so many Irish. There was time to sit and rest. Now the corporation doesn't care about the girls the way they once did. There are enough Irish girls looking for work that they don't have to. Why the Irish are to blame for all this, I wasn't understanding. Surely we aren't the reason the windows are nailed shut, or why the rooms are always hot and so filled with dirt. You can hardly breathe. Is it our fault that the days are long? Wouldn't we prefer a 10-hour day too? But I wasn't afraid to say any of that. The words were in my head, clear enough, but I wasn't sure they would come out that way. I could feel my heart pounding in my chest. Still, I decided to ask one question that would not wait. What about you? You talk to me, and I'm Irish. You're different, Annie said. You're not like the rest. Thursday, September 9th, 1847. Lowell. Ruth Shattuck is ill with a fever. Annie says that she is delirious and sleeps fitfully. I went back with Annie to the boarding house during the noon meal. Ruth was sleeping, so we didn't disturb her. Annie is greatly troubled by her condition. Friday, September 10th, 1847. Lowell. The boy who gets his finger snapped off was back in the mills today. When he saw me, he came right over and said thank you, very politely. I asked him his name, and he said Sylvester Sawyer. Such a big name for such a wee boy. Sunday, September 12th, 1847. Lowell. At noon, a knock was given at the door. We had just come home from Mass. 'Twas Annie, as planned. I was glad that she met with no difficulties. Aunt Nora made a special birthday dinner, corned beef, cabbage, and roast potatoes. There was more. There was more, too. A cake of fine wheaten bread with mixed with honey. Annie was surprised that I am only 15. She said I act older than my age. She said I should have told her 'twas my birthday. Now she wants to be thinking of a present for me. I told her there is no need, which is so. Once Annie told Aunt Nora that she believes in ghosts, there was no stopping them. They had a lively talk about what Annie calls the spirit world. They agreed the ghosts are poor souls stuck between this life and the next. The two of them are dear to me, but both live with their heads in the clouds. After tea, Annie asked if we would like to hear one of her poems. I'd never heard one before. She must have approved of Aunt Nora, else she wouldn't have offered, if you ask me. She reached into her sack and took out her little poetry writing book. Aunt Nora moved from the table to the rocking chair. Then she said there was nothing she liked more than to hear a fine piece of writing. Annie read in her soft, soothing voice, in the poem, a small girl gets lost in a thick forest, trying to find her way back home. She comes upon a note tacked to a tree. The note invites her to climb to the top. Once there, she will be able to see her future. The tree is the oldest and tallest in the forest, but the branches are low and good for climbing. She climbs the tree to the very top, and when she gets there, just as the note promised, she sees all the days of her life laid out before her, like an endless sentence in the way Annie says it. Then, when she climbs down from the tree, the note is gone. That's the end of the poem. Annie asked if we liked it. Truth is, I wanted to know what the girl saw and what happened to the note. If 'twasn't there when she came down, who took it then? But I held my tongue, thinking these were silly questions. Aunt Nora was wiping tears from her eyes. I didn't think the poem was sad, but I'm not one for poetry. Annie asked Aunt Nora what she thought. Aunt Nora said her niece was blessed to have found such a friend, such as she. That's the only time I've ever seen Annie blush. 'Tis my first birthday without Ma and Da. We have not heard from them in some time. Monday, September 13th, 1847. Lowell. Everyone is talking about Clarissa Burroughs getting caught. She was secretly meeting a boy in the mill yard when the night watchman came upon them. They were startled and ran from him. But when they tried to climb over the fence, Clarissa's dress got caught on one of the spikes. The watchman called for help. I understood it took a while to get her down. Annie and Clarissa didn't utter a word to anyone last night and went to bed without eating. In the morning, she remained in bed, saying she felt poorly. She is not in work today. Annie and Mrs. Jackson would surely have something to say about this. No one knows what has happened to the boy. Wednesday, September 15th, 1847. Lowell. Each day I am becoming better acquainted with my machines. That's what Annie says. I have nimble fingers and am doing better than she expected in such a short period of time. Sometimes, however, I fear I won't be able to do my tests properly. Thank the Lord that this is only fleeting, and I tend my machines without mishap. Thursday, September 16th, 1847. Lowell. Ruth is feeling better and is back at work. 'Twas so good to see her. I gave her a big hello, and she smiled. Sunday, September 19th, 1847. Lowell. Aunt Nora was eager to get to church this morning. St. Patrick's has a new organ now. Aunt Nora says the old one was too small. Later, I met Annie, and we talked away the afternoon. I told her how much I miss Ma and Da. I have not said a word to anyone, not even Aunt Nora. Annie told me about her family. 'Tis a sad story. Annie is the youngest and the only girl. She has five brothers. Her mother used to hit her with a small branch she kept hidden in the kitchen. Annie couldn't understand why her mother hated her so. Then one day she found out from Jed, her oldest brother, that she was not her real mother. Her real mother had died giving birth to her. At first Annie couldn't believe it, but then the more she thought about it, the truer it became. A week later she found out. She left to find work in Lowell. Lowell was my salvation, she said. She would like to write Jed, but is afraid to let anyone know where she is. Later, Annie gave me my present. 'Twas in a box, all nicely tied up with violet ribbons. Inside was a delicate shawl, wrapped around a book of poems. I threw the shawl over my shoulder, and Annie said not to forget about the book. She is forever reading, and I know she thinks I should. Imagine spending money for a book. She said that 'tis every individual's responsibility to improve their minds. I have to bite my lip to keep from laughing when Annie talks like that. I told her I was more interested in improving my purse than my mind. She laughed and said, "I suppose you are," Mary Driscoll. Then I hugged her by the way of thanks. Tuesday, September 21st, 1847. Well, merciful Lord, a letter from Sean. He is building a road. The bosses treat them like animals, and the people in town do not like them being around. They think they are already too many Irish, and they work cheap, and this makes it bad for everyone. A boy from County Kerry was killed when a huge rock fell on him. 'Twas being lifted when the chain broke. Another boy was killed by a gunpowder blast. The blast sent rocks flying, and he was struck in the head while taking a drink of water. Bless us and save us. There are so many sad stories like these. Sean says that Americans do not like the Irish. He's thinking now 'twas a mistake to come here. America is not the way he thought 'twould be. America is not the way he thought 'twould be. 'Tisn't the way I thought 'twould be either. But better than back home. At least here there is food to eat and hope for tomorrow. Sean has visited Alice O'Donnell. The convent is nearby, and he says she is being taken care of. That puts my mind at ease. 'Twas good of Sean to go see her. He's a dear boy with a good heart. None better. Thursday, September 23rd, 1847. Lowell. Mr. Fowler was eyeing me all morning, buzzing around like a maddened fly he was. In the afternoon, he crept up on me, silent as a mouse. I did not see him until he was right on me. I could feel his breath on my neck. "Don't let your mind wander, Mary," he hissed into my ear. 'Twas a miracle I could hear him above the noise, and he was standing very, very close. I was scared as a rabbit in its burrow. Annie showed me the signal they use to warn each other that Mr. Fowler is coming. 'Tis making a circle with your arms over your head. I have always wondered why they do that. He won't catch me again. Friday, September 24th, 1847. Lowell. Ruth Shatnick walked out today. Some of her bobbins began falling on the floor, making quite a clatter. She just stood there looking at them with that dreamy look in her eyes. Watched them fall like they weren't even hers. Then she ran out of the spinning room without an "if you don't mind" to anyone. I went back with Annie just as soon as the 7 o'clock bell rang. Ruth was packing when we arrived. Annie tried to convince her to stay, but she wasn't hearing any of it. Talking away she was while she packed. Annie and I sat on the bed and listened. 'Twas all we could do. I don't have eyes in the back of my head. I can't tend that many machines without going mad. I need fresh air. I am going home where there are no bells. Bells that tell you when you can open your eyes and when you can close them, when you can sleep and when you can eat. I don't know if I ever get those bells out of my head. Thanks to the Lord, Annie was able to get her to wait until tomorrow. Then Annie will take her to the stagecoach. I have never seen Annie this upset. Usually she runs as deep as the ocean. Downstairs, as I was leaving, she said, "'Twas a shame, and Ruth is a fine girl, she is that." On the way home, I thought about the look in Ruth's eyes. "I have been here too long," she said. "I hope I'm not here too long." Monday, September 27th, 1847. Lowell. Another payday. Aunt Nora and I counted the money we have, like a hive hoards honey. We lay away money for Ma and Da. Friday, October 1st, 1847. Lowell. Clarissa Burroughs' beautiful long black hair was caught in her machine, and her scalp was pulled off. Glory of God, 'twas a frightful spectacle. Her howls of pain were loud enough to be heard above the roar of the machines. It took forever to stop them. By the time Mr. Fowler cut off her hair and pulled her away, 'twas too late. There was utter silence. Mr. Fowler wasted no time. He was more concerned about the machines were down than the fate of the girl. As soon as her limp body was removed from the room, he pulled the cord and ordered everyone back to work. Ruth had warned Clarissa not to wear her hair that way. She showed her how to fix it up so it wouldn't get caught. Because this has happened before, Ruth warned her how dangerous it was, but Clarissa would not listen. She insisted on leaving her hair loose because she was so proud of how long and shiny it was. But look how her pride has gotten her now. I have not slept since this happened.